This is Dusty Rhodes, the American dream, the buckle, the boot, the prestige, the money of the Bunkhouse Stampede. Being the baddest of the bad, being the bull of the woods, if you will. 25-30 men stampeding into one little bit of ring, you understand? With one thing in mind, to hurt somebody, to kick somebody booty, to twist their arm off and put their ankles up in the chin. And many mornings I got up dwelling on the fact of being the two-time winner of the Bunkhouse Stampede. How am I going to do it this year when last year I had to feel around to see if my nose was still on my face? Look up in the morning and see if my ears were still on my head. My eyeballs in the socket were playing steady on my mind, because I knew Dusty Rhodes has to be the Bunkhouse Stampede champion for the third time. If you will, for your hockey fans, it's a hat trick. You understand? It's a hat trick. And Dusty Rhodes now comes out you with this in mind. Anywhere, any place that on the marquee you see the National Wrestling Alliance presents the Bunkhouse Stampede, if you want to just feel a little bit of how bad it is to be the baddest, to be the bull of the woods, then and only then, buy your ticket, walk in, and sit down and watch Dusty Rhodes become the bull of the woods.
I like the baby, baby all in blue. It's a wrestling show with Nate and Matto.
Is that a takeoff on something, or is that just a cool new song?
I don't know. Maybe it is newest member of the WWE Hall of Fame, Kid Rock's very first hit.
That his first
I am
hit
the
was
bull god.
Ba with the ba.
Nope.
First one I heard was ba with the ba.
Shh. Then you got on the train late, pal.
I did. They started playing it on Q101.
I am the bull god. Yeah, Q101.
The rock
was
alternative.
All over. They were all over I am the bull god.
But I didn't pay any attention to that because that song's just kind of boring.
See through you.
Probably flew right past me. But the first time they played ba with the ba, I was like, what is this? Because it sounds so ridiculous. And I thought it was some kind of joke, like a man cow prank or something.
We'll get.
Like, what's this man cow prank they're playing on the air?
Yesterday, here's a little bit of what happened to us. You know what? That's some dirty old man that talked him into it.
Sweet talk, smooth talk.
Yeah.
Okay, honey. No, the body's nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah. So if you open your legs and everything, yeah. A plane has crashed into the World Trade Center.
Oh, my God.
Holy,
and we're not
no
kidding.
Joke. No joke.
A plane went
into the
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, guys.
Dude,
a plane
there's
is.
There's a hole in the World Trade Center.
Oh, my God.
Fox
News. Oh, dear Jesus, guys.
I have always wondered what that would be like if a plane, like, hit the Hancock
guys,
or the Sears
yeah,
Tower.
Guys. Yeah. You,
this is
I'm sorry.
There's a giant hole in the middle of the building.
You're going to want to turn on your TV.
Yeah.
A plane is hanging out of the World Trade Center. There are flames everywhere. We got to route some news through. Do it immediately. Oh, my God. This is some of the most amazing footage I've ever seen. If you're in your car right now, oh, my God.
It looks like it's out of a Schwarzenegger flick.
It doesn't look real.
Yeah.
The World Trade Center, this is not a hoax. There is a plane hanging out of the side of the building.
There's about a 10-story hole.
Yes.
Wow.
At the top of the World Trade Center.
Love Cheese, let me know as soon as we have this. Let me know.
Wow.
Let me know as soon as we have it.
He's right behind you.
Smoke.
Let's get it going.
Okay.
This is amazing.
This is, oh, my God. Man Cow's Morning Madhouse, the Free Speech Radio Network. Oh, my God. Okay, we'll be back.
Dude,
this is
dude, another plane.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
We just watched it. I just saw it. Another plane just flew into the other building.
Oh, my God.
Another plane just flew into the second tower. This raises, this has to be deliberate, folks.
Well, that would begin to say that, yeah.
We just saw on live television as a second plane flew into the second tower of the World Trade Center.
What is happening?
Given
Jesus God,
what has been going on around the world.
Oh, dear Lord.
Some of the
oh, my God, guys.
Come to mind, Osama bin Laden.
Oh,
who knows what?
Oh my God,
Eric's
guys!
Is with us, Eric. I know you have.
We were standing here. Another plane, live on television, flew into the other tower.
Well, that's tough for me to hear.
We'll get into that in just
kept
a
going.
Second.
It kept going like a real song.
First off,
eventually it was over, and they were just like, "Yep, there was a real song. Here's another one."
I've got plenty of thoughts on that, but it's your boy, Big Time Matto, with me as always. I'm going to make you loady to my low-key, Nate Adams.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. Wait, loady to your Lenny, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Low-key was the guy with
Low-key's the whatever.
I kick and I have a
I got
very low
so many,
voice.
You know, I'm trying to remember parody songs. I'm trying to remember tag teams. It's tough.
I don't
it's
know why
sometimes.
You're trying to do all that stuff. I don't know where you think it's going to get you.
I don't know. Yeah. Gutter.
Could
Mental Institute.
Close to the gutter, that's for sure. Yeah.
But as we were talking.
Talking Kid Rock.
Kid Rock. He's in the Hall of Fame, dog. All of his lasting contributions to wrestling.
So he's got to be going into the celebrity wing, because I don't recall him ever actually working an angle.
With?
I don't know, Pete Rose, he's in there.
He's in there, who else?
Drew Carey.
Drew Carey's in there, who else?
Is Schwarzenegger in there?
Cocaine.
Well, he's the first ever world box office champion.
I think he might be in there.
What's his face? Price is Right? Bob Barker, did he make it in there?
Oh, could
he
be.
He might have.
He was on a couple times.
More. But you got Drew Carey, that's what's important.
So yeah, Kid Rock played more than one concerts at WrestleMania? Is this what's getting him in? Has he done multiple WrestleMania concerts?
I assume by those standards, they're going to be inducting Saliva next year.
That's why there wasn't an Intercontinental title match on like that 10-year run of WrestleManias,
because
of the 10 Kid Rock concerts in a row, if I remember correctly. Well, good for him. I see with him and Jarrett going in the same year, they're doing a real white trash theme to the Hall of Fame this year. So
all this means is that Kid Rock will be there live at the Hall of Fame ceremony to play Cowboy.
Here's Jeff Jarrett.
Beetlejuice,
hey,
what's up?
Stat nut.
What'd you call me?
Stat nut.
You know who you're talking to?
Yeah, you, Stat nut.
It's Mr. Flatnut to you.
Yeah!
When Jarrett comes out.
Is he still running for office? Maybe he'll...
Waka, waka, waka. Boom, boom.
He'll be up there preaching some right-wing politics. That could be nice. Say some controversial stuff at the WWE Hall of Fame.
I said, yeah. Oh,
Trump's in,
right,
isn't
here.
He?
Mm. Yeah.
President of the United States, Donald Trump. He's in that celebrity wing.
What's his face? Milwaukee Brewers broadcaster...
Bob Uecker.
Thank you.
Bob,
the Uke.
I would have said the male lead for Mr. Belvedere. Good thing I knew what you were talking about with that dumb sports reference.
Yeah. The Uke, he's in there.
He got strangled by Andre the Giant at one of those WrestleManias.
Poor guy.
Good for him.
Anybody want a peanut?
Oh, good for him?
Yeah, it was an honor to get strangled by Andre, I think.
If it wasn't for Kid Rock, we wouldn't have the greatest of all the Undertaker's runs, and that's Biker Taker.
Wow, that's certainly debatable.
No, that's his best run.
As the Biker Taker, what do you think chances are he might be coming back as Biker Taker this year, seeing as he left all of his dead man gear in the ring last year?
He's only got one thing to come back as.
Is he just going to dress up as the dead man again and be like, I forgot about that. I was planning on retiring, but that match was really shitty, so I'm going to give it another whirl.
I'm just do one more here with John Cena.
Or he's going to be like,
where I'm Biker.
Undertaker was retired last year, but, Mark Calloway is still out here, and he's spoiling for a fight.
He's still out here.
Chowing my
these
mouth.
These soup bones. I got these soup bones.
He's one of the best
name on anybody.
Pure strikers in wrestling history.
Plus, you got racial undertones of white Biker Taker versus black John Cena. Which
that's
is nice.
True. Yeah.
Play up that race war.
Get back to who do they got that they can throw into that Los Boricuas?
I was going to say that was probably the best is when they just had like
three-way.
What if we have like a Puerto Rican street gang versus a motorcycle club?
Makes
they're called
sense.
Clubs.
That could really be a way to elevate that Andrade Cien Almas, if that's
ooh.
What they're still calling him. Have him three-way, just
have him show
war
up.
Of the races.
Have him show up night after Mania.
Put away
with
Cena
Los
and
Boricuas
Taker.
Los Boricuas 2018.
Just have him put away Cena and Taker, both of them. Bury
nice.
Them both.
Oh, that's some solid.
So who all's in this Hall of Fame so far?
Okay,
all I know is Kid Rock and Jarrett. Is it
Kid
who
Rock
has been named?
Jarrett. Hillbilly Jim.
Is that seriously?
Yeah.
He hasn't been in?
No.
I thought he was in like 20 years ago.
Ivory.
She's not really white trash. She's kind of breaking the theme they got going.
Goldberg.
Wait, Goldberg was, I thought that was last year. Oh no, he wrestled last year.
No, he wrestled last year.
Whew.
They bring him back and then they put him in the hall the next year now. That's their big thing. Okay.
Good for him.
Yeah.
So I'd say Goldberg's probably the big like centerpiece of it then.
Oh, him and Kid Rock.
I thought Jarrett was. Everybody was talking about Jarrett. I hadn't even heard that they announced Goldberg.
Well, Goldberg makes sense because he's back in the fold. But Jarrett
Double
was like,
J might steal the show this year.
Double J was like the, what?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Probably going to get Road Dogg to induct him, do you think?
Oh, wow. Double J.
I can see the Road Dogg. Who's going to induct Kid Rock? Joe C's dead, right?
Hey, Terry. Hey, Joe C.
No, man.
We just got clued in a few minutes ago. To make up for it, we want to honor you with one of our world-renowned five-second poses. What do you think?
Yeah, look, now we know your plan tonight with Kid Rock, your song, American Badass, and we're really looking forward to it, you know? But to be politically correct with our pose, we need to know. Are you like a midget or something?
No. Huh? Oh, you're a dwarf.
The dwarf? No, he's a gnome. No, that's what he is.
You're an Ewok.
Yes.
Ewok. Man, you know what? I'm very honored, but, you know, you go out and you have your match. After that, you guys can go yourself.
What?
Yeah, so I guess Taker. I guess Biker Taker comes back a night early.
Wow.
It's
going to be a big event. We should probably pick up some tickets.
Yeah.
Yeah, it segues nicely into our topic for the day. All the white trash going into the Hall of Fame. We're going to be covering probably the most white trash pay-per-view idea that any wrestling company ever put together, the Bunkhouse Stampede.
Oh.
Which is a name that just kind of screams like, only Southern hillbillies order this show.
Yeah.
If you're anything other than a Southern hillbilly, you probably don't know what a Bunkhouse Stampede is.
We'll gladly return your money. This isn't for you.
You're probably not going to have any interest in this whatsoever.
Yeah.
But this is the Bunkhouse Stampede from 1988. I think it was on pay-per-view. Maybe just closed circuit. I think they were doing some pay-per-view at this point, though.
I think they announced it as pay-per-view.
So it's not, clearly, from what they've told us, the only Bunkhouse Stampede in 1988. But it is the biggest, I guess, because it's on pay-per-view.
Well, it's the finals.
We've been watching the build-up to this for like a good 6 weeks or something now.
There's been Bunkhouse Stampede
still hasn't
matches
been explained to us
leading up to
what
this,
a Bunkhouse Stampede is, what this all means, or why we should care. But it's here, and we watched it. So now we've got a rundown of everything that happened at this big, big event.
We watched it. Now we got to talk about it.
It's not going to be too hard. Usually we got 12 or 13 matches on those hour-long shit WCW shows. We got 4 matches on this card.
Yeah, that made it
four
really hard for me to
matches
build a 5-count, pal.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to dig a little deeper, get a little bit more nuanced.
No.
Let's run down this card. Our first match, Nikita Koloff, the TV champion. He's taking
World
on
TV
one
champion
half of the Midnight Express, beautiful Bobby Eaton.
World TV champion.
Being a TV title match, this is, you know,
a world TV
gotta
title
be wrestled within a TV time limit, and we get to the end of that. And then the match time runs out. We got a draw.
20-minute draw.
And the Midnights just put the boots to Koloff because he's a dum-dum, and there's more of them than there are of him.
Nobody saves him.
Second match, this is for the prestigious, the legendary, the just the jewel of professional wrestling.
Crown jewel of professional
Western
wrestling.
Western States Heritage title.
Which, of course, originated from the Western States.
That's right. Eastern States, not apply.
Nay.
Champion Barry Windham is in there against challenger Larry Zbyszko with Baby Doll.
Isn't Zbyszko from Pittsburgh?
With his valet Baby Doll. It's like a big scam. A mailing address thing. He's renting an apartment in Dallas, Texas now, so he's able to show that.
He can be in the Western States Heritage run.
Eligible for the Western States Heritage title.
Just build out of Pittsburgh.
You know, Larry Zbyszko, big win. He wins that title after there's a ref bump, and then he socks Windham in the jaw with Baby Doll's high heel.
And that was the only title Larry Zbyszko ever won.
That's all she wrote, huh? Allegedly. Flair Speaking of titles, speaking of champions, Ric Flair.
Now, he's not the world television title champion.
No, he's the world heavyweight
champion.
National Wrestling Alliance champion. The big gold, the real champion. Yeah. Say what you will about too many titles, you know. They throw those other titles in the trash. This is the one you need to pay attention to.
Yeah.
The real world champion is
in there.
Scott
Hall.
Against one half of the Road Warriors. Hawk.
Which one? Oh, okay.
Hawk, not Animal.
It's not Paul Ellering?
Not Animal. Not any of the other members of the Legion of Doom like Jake the Snake Roberts or Rick Rude or Paul Ellering. Talking Hawk.
Or Draws or Heidenreich.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Or Sonny.
More? Yeah, Sonny too. Yeah. Sure, sure. They really expanded their ranks there in the later years.
They got lonely.
Flair, that wily old rascal, he gets DQ'd after using a steel chair. So, you know, that's that.
The end.
No big finish to that world title match. Bunkhouse Stampede, because this is our main event. That's why you can have a screw job in the world title, because what we're all here for is the Bunkhouse Stampede. God,
and that big boot trophy.
You put a ring in an arena. You wrap that ring in a steel cage.
Okay.
You put eight men inside the steel cage.
At the same time?
The eight men are allowed to bring weapons.
What?
And you win by tossing the men over the top of the cage, which just seems impractical.
No,
or
highly
throwing
plausible.
Them through the cage door, which still, you know, kind of a pain in the ass. Here we go. Dusty Rhodes is in there versus Tully Blanchard versus Ivan Koloff versus The Warlord versus Arn Anderson versus Lex Luger versus The Barbarian versus Road Warrior Animal. Every man for himself.
I see you
every
announced
man
it
for himself
by their entrance order.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, it was nice.
I wrote them down just like they did it. First elimination, Animal eliminates Koloff.
Mm-hmm.
Then Warlord and the Animal, they're kind of struggling by the door. They get knocked out at the same time.
By a Barbarian Big Boot.
Double A, Lex Luger and Tully Blanchard, they're all struggling by the door, and then they all get knocked out at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
That's leaving two men in the ring. Dusty, who's won the last two Bunkhouse Stampedes. However,
if they're
the
even
Barbarian
were.
Has won the most Bunkhouse Stampedes this month.
No.
That's confusing.
Animal won the most leading up to the prestigious event.
Yeah. Okay, my mistake.
Yeah.
Either way, Barbarian gets thrown out by Dusty. Dusty's won the third. I guess these are the Bunkhouse Stampede finals, but
yeah.
We haven't seen any sort of tournament bracket or explanation as to why this one's the finals. But anyways, there's a gigantic cowboy boot as a trophy, and Dusty wins it for the third time in a row.
And a check.
Oh, what do you get a
for
check for?
$500,000.
Oh, for a common man, a working man.
Half
that's
a mil.
Cool chunk of cash right there.
Yeah.
What do you did with it? You probably just bought another fur coat.
Slim Jims.
So now we get into the five count. After the rundown, this is our format. This is how it goes. This is when we dig deeper into the show. And we pick five talking points that really jumped out at us. And we're like, hey, this needs to be discussed. The world needs to hear about this.
We should just.
They need to know.
We should just skip over it and just talk about our three count.
People
for an hour.
Need to know if it's worth watching that Bunkhouse
it's
Stampede
not.
1988, the finals. Should
I
dig it up on
right
the
now.
WWE Network?
No.
Should I do it?
No.
I would beg to differ. I think it's a nice way to spend an evening.
Without watching the other two pay per views that they had that year, I'd say this is the one to skip.
If you can only watch two of the three, not the Bunkhouse Stampede. All right. Yeah. I guess maybe there's a reason they didn't continue with the Bunkhouse Stampede as one of their big pay per view concepts.
Until H brings it back in NXT.
That's true. That's probably going to happen very soon.
Yeah.
I remember last Starrcade ever, Starrcade 2000, they brought back a Bunkhouse match, but it wasn't in a cage.
Did they?
It was, get this, the Filthy Animals.
Oh, hold on now.
Okay.
Nash?
Got it? No,
he wasn't in it?
No.
Filthy Animals. Okay, so Rey Mysterio.
Yeah, that's one of the Filthy Animals.
K-Dog.
Yeah, Conando. Yeah.
I want to say a Billy Kidman.
That's right. Those are the three members of the Filthy Animals.
Is that all the Filthy Animals?
That's,
are there any more of them?
I think there were maybe more at some points, but for this particular match I'm thinking of, those were the three.
Okay.
Versus WWE Hall of Famer Jeff Jarrett.
Okay.
And those Nazi twin brothers.
Oh, the Harris
and,
twins?
Yeah, and there was no cage. They set up a bar in the middle of the ring.
Like a steel bar?
No, like a wooden bar, to serve drinks.
Oh, I'm sorry, this is 2000 WCW.
And
okay,
I remember
yeah.
they had a popcorn machine.
Yep.
And then they just like broke brooms and bottles from the bar over each other's heads for like 20 minutes. At some point, somebody, I think maybe it was Jarrett, got their head shoved in the popcorn machine. And he was like, oh, I'm drowning in the popcorn. I'm drowning in the popcorn.
That's a good bit.
But yeah, leading up to it, Jarrett was all like, we're bringing back the bunkhouse. It's going to be bunkhouse. And I was like, oh, what does this even mean?
Cowabunkhouse.
And now that, you know, I've relived the origins of the bunkhouse, this bunkhouse, I'm even more confused.
Yeah.
I don't think WCW has any idea what a bunkhouse means.
Jarrett definitely.
What is a bunkhouse? Just like we're a bunch of farmhands sleep together in a big room or something, probably?
Yeah, I would assume.
Oh, Lord. A lot of brawls going on in those bunkhouses back in the day.
Yeah. I'd probably just man sex, just man on man sex.
I'm going to have to try to Bing bunkhouse after we're done with this and see where all this hillbilly shit's originating from.
Heard that the whole cowboy lore is
mostly
grossly exaggerated. It's just dudes banging each other out on the wilderness for night on end.
A lot of just lonely men looking for comfort, looking for warmth.
You have no idea how bad it gets. I wish I knew how to quit you.
You want to be a sicko and bang a cow? No.
Well, I'll give it a whirl.
Yeah, try anything twice.
What's your number one?
I didn't much care for the Nikita Koloff versus Bobby Eaton match itself, so I'm going to give my number one to Mr. Jim Cornette, who really helped make
the Louisville match slugger, Jim Cornette.
Bearable.
He was out there on the the sidelines managing Bobby Eaton.
Yeah, you really... The ring was mic'd up well, so you could really hear Cornette.
You literally
well.
Heard everything he said, I think, throughout this entire match.
Yeah, there was one spot in particular towards the beginning of the match where Nikita throws off Bobby Eaton. He's got him in a hold or something. Nikita just kind of flicks him off.
Nikita's got all that Russian strength. He's going to throw him right off of him.
But his hands are up near his head. He clearly doesn't grab the hair and... it takes a tumble to the ropes near Cornette. And at the same time, without saying a word to each other, without even looking at each other, Eaton and Cornette both turn to the ref and give him the hold on 1 second finger and then go right into the, he's pulling my hair.
Yeah, this guy, he's a fucking Russian cheater. I don't know when we started cheering for Russians, but at some point that happened.
You want to talk about amazing chemistry.
Cornette can motor mouth like nobody else before, and he talks throughout this entire match, and you hear everything he says. He's like, the whole time he's in character. Like, I figure not many managers bother to just like say shit that's in character the whole match, but he's like giving him legit advice on how to win and whatnot and stuff like that. He's arguing with the fans, he's arguing with the ref, and he's getting on Jim Ross's nerves like he always does whenever he's anywhere around Jim Ross. And yeah, this match, I guess nobody really bought one half of a tag team as a potential dethroner of Nikita Koloff and that TV title, so you need that extra pizzazz, that extra little bit of sizzle to the steak of a Jim Cornette. And then it was nice that you got the whole team out there to just put the boots to Koloff at the end. Number one I wanted to pick out of the crowd and talk about was old Tony Schiavone doing ring announcing details for some reason.
Because I had Bob Cuddle.
Nice,
hey, everybody, I'm Bob Cuddle.
Nice caterpillar on top of his lip. Looked like somebody stapled a beaver to his head. He's looking classy, but, not the best ring announcer voice Tony Schiavone. He works much better as a play-by-play man. But what I really loved, what really brought me back, made me feel like I was a little boy sitting and watching wrestling again, was him announcing the time limits and
how
much time had gone by through all these fucking matches. I love that. And we don't even have time limits in wrestling anymore. And when they used to actually like pay attention to it and make a big deal, and like there'd be a lot of, you know, time limit draws, or like you'd make a big deal of like, ooh, you gotta hurry and try to win before the time limit's over, it made it feel so much more real and so much more important. And just having somebody out there to do that.
Poop. Poop.
Okay.
And speaking of poop, Larry Zbysko.
The living legend.
Taking on Barry Windham.
Taking him to Larryland.
God bless Barry Windham, because he still managed to have an entertaining match with number two, Larry Zbysko.
The most boring man in the world?
Yeah, he's number two. He's poo.
I gotta say, kind of liked Zbyszko in this match. Probably because he's in there with Wyndham, but this is probably the most interesting I've ever seen him look.
Absolutely.
He's doing just some solid heel stuff.
Yep.
He's doing a lot of like good taking down Wyndham and doing some knee locks and then grinding his elbow and the knee all vicious while he had him in the knee lock, which I liked. I was like, that's some good working on that knee, Larry Zbyszko.
And then complaining when Wyndham grinds him back.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know. The guy's taking cheap shots. He's taking advantages, and the ref's doing nothing about it because there's this whole Barry Windham bias here in this Southern hick wrestling promotion.
Makes me sick.
And Larry Zbyszko is probably going to like bring some class and sophistication finally to this Western States Heritage title.
Oh, we got a very telling line from a young JR right at the get-go of the match.
Oklahoma's own Jim Ross.
Match hasn't quite started yet. Zbyszko's in there, and he's talking trash to Windham. And his valet, the Perfect 10, Baby Doll, she gets in the ring and she gets right in Wyndham's face.
Yeah.
And she's poking him in the chest. She's giving the old one finger poke in the chest.
Wyndham, a little bit lanky, not like the most built guy ever, but still a big guy, a big tall guy.
6'6".
Really moves, really athletic. Yeah. And I got to say, I'm not so certain that he could take Baby Doll. In a fair one-on-one fight.
No, did you see the arms on Baby Doll?
I saw the arms, I saw the gown. Those boulders she called shoulders. Yeah. Like, whoo, so much. My number two is definitely just how good Baby Doll was looking.
Okay, yeah, so she's driving her finger into Wyndham's chest. Mm-hmm. Like, you got a lot of nerve. I'm not sure what
does.
For, but he's
sure
got
does.
A lot of nerve.
I'm trying to take on her man, Larry.
And then JR says, why doesn't Barry stick his finger in her chest? See how she likes it.
Right in one of her boobies, right, JR? Dirty old dish rag.
JR, what are you doing, man?
I don't know. She's got a nice dress on.
She does.
I feel like it's fitting her form way better than those dresses back in 1985 did. Her hair's a little bit more worked out. I mean, she still looks like somebody put a blonde wig on an Easter Island statue. Like, there's nothing you can do
for sure.
About that giant noggin. But at least, like, her complexion seems like it's cleared up. She doesn't have that just like splotchy, zitty skin going on anymore.
She kind of looks like...
I feel like her makeup's a little bit more like settled down than it was in 1985.
She kind of looks like if Rocky from The Mask had a nice blonde wig.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Get him one of those, put him in a pretty dress, and that's what she's looking like these days. She really got herself together. And after giving her so much shit for just being a hot mess all in 1985, I'm saying it right now. She, you know, not the perfect 10 in 1985, but you go to 1988...
High 6, low 7.
Still not the perfect 10. High 6, low 7. Good work, Baby Doll.
The perfect high 6, low
really
7.
Brought it together.
Baby Doll.
It's a lot more time on the mic these days. She's being a lot more snide and like bitchy with her talking, which I think she's bringing some presentation to Larry Zbyszko, and this may be the first time I've ever seen a Larry Zbyszko match and not been like, ugh, change the channel.
So Zbyszko's working the knee for most of the match.
Little package.
We're getting towards the end of the match there, Zbyszko's got that knee all locked up. And Wyndham's close to the ropes, but not close enough to grab him. You can't really move, and Baby Doll's letting him have it, and she's yelling at him. She's yelling at him.
Let that motherfucker
and,
have it.
Wyndham's just like, shut up.
Kind of had the same hair, Wyndham and Baby Doll at this point.
A little bit. Maybe that's why she was poking his finger.
You know,
could be, yeah.
Poking his chest.
I told you I was showing up looking like this.
But he's getting jawed at by her. He turns and he's like, you know, shut up, you bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Which is funny.
But sometimes you got to tell a woman.
But the real story here is...
Lay it on me.
Baby Doll's bending over at that apron.
Sure.
Slapping that mat.
Ooh. Buddy.
We got some Baby Doll cleave.
Ooh, how's it looking?
How's it looking? Not bad.
I'd like to stick my finger there.
Oh, easy, JR. Right, easy, JR. Oh, now. I got a third thing I'm into.
Okay.
And that's just Hawk versus Flair.
Okay.
I liked it.
Moving on to that world title match.
Nice contrasting styles.
Ooh, you got the big rough and tumble brawler from Chicago.
Yeah.
And then you got the, you know, the technician, the guy who takes his time and he waits for his opportunities and attacks your legs.
Squirrely opportunist.
Gets you in that figure four. You know, I got to ask, with those tree trunks that Hawk calls legs, could Flair even get him in the figure four?
Oh, boy.
That's what I was thinking coming into this match.
Hawk, his legs, nowhere near animals.
Well, that's
nowhere.
True.
So he got lucky there.
Got some length on it.
But
animals,
Hawk, yeah, he could jump.
Animals
and he could
got
run.
The girth.
Yeah.
We missed their entrances because it's some sort of, you know, production snafu, which is a bummer, I thought.
1998 or 1988 production difficulties.
Would have liked to have seen Flair come out in his robe. He's always got nice robes.
Yeah, he does. But we don't get to see it. We just get the match. It starts with Flair giving Hawk some chops in the corner, which Hawk
a little
no sells.
I'll tell you what, those chops weren't doing much.
That was fun.
You can't just chop a big old boulder of a man like this. You gotta find some way to break this guy down. He's gonna plow right through you. But my number three is kind of just talking about the formula of how you build a match and how every single one of these matches did the exact same formula. And they basically worked every single time to make decent matches. What you do, the first 5 minutes of the match, the bad guy just gets the shit kicked out of him, just brutally.
Yep.
And you just show that the bad guy's not as good a wrestler as the good guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point, the bad guy does a cheating move, so he gets the advantage, then and just like works over something. So the fans are like, oh man, look at this. He cheated to get the advantage. Now this good guy's injured. And then you build to a comeback. It was the same formula every single time.
Yeah.
It's the same formula you see in 90% of wrestling matches, and very little deviations. And, you know, those little deviations, the tiny little differences are what makes a match in general. But if you don't have that formula, if you're not doing that thing, if you're just trading moves back and forth, I'm going to do some moves and you're going to do it, it doesn't mean as much. It doesn't get people. People don't even know probably why they're getting rowdy at the end, but it's because they've been sucked into this formula. And we got, you know, three big one-on-one matches, and just watching them all in a row and seeing how they were basically could have been the same match, except you do some slightly different moves because there's some slightly different guys. You start looking at how you make this shit happen.
And unlike
down there in the South, this is how you made it happen.
Unlike that train wreck of a pay-per-view from WCW we watched before, this one, everybody saved their bleeding to the very end.
Talking the gathering,
all the way to the bunkhouse.
Starcade. Starcade 85, was that it?
Yeah,
last end of Starcade.
They almost made it all the way through, but
that
Flair...
was some garbage, because,
Flair had to bleed.
Flair's got to bleed. Yeah. I didn't even notice when it happened. Just at some point when I was watching the match, I was like, Flair's got blood all over
him. They were outside. I don't think Flair even took a shot to the head.
No.
But he just came up bloody.
Yeah, he's got to get it in. Flair, talking about formulas, he's got his formula for sure, and bleeding and begging's a big part of that, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was... the most unnecessary Flair bleeding I've ever seen.
You know, he's not one to be overdone. He's probably pissed that he didn't get to be in that bunkhouse match, because that's the big thing everybody cares about. You know, you want to be in the main event, the main attraction, the bunkhouse stampede.
Well, in all fairness, you think Flair wouldn't like a crack at that half a mil?
That giant cowboy boot, that giant papier-mâché cowboy boot, too. I bet that looked pretty good sitting on his mantle.
Just to get off track for a minute, because we've been good.
Please.
We got the big Bullet Club pay-per-view or whatever, event.
Oh, Lord.
That's going to be at the Sears Center in
These
Chicago.
Fucking goofy idiots again.
Yeah.
When are they going to go away?
They have their own event, and it's going to be in Chicago, so that's going to be huge.
That's not Chicago.
It's whatever park.
Western suburbs.
Park or whatever. Yeah, it's
out by the Cabela's off the fucking interstate.
It's fucking north of O'Hare, which is like Milwaukee, essentially.
Let's not pretend like this is some sort of metropolitan event these guys got put together.
It was home to one of the greatest TNA Slammiversaries or Bound for Glory.
Bound for Glory
BFG.
The event that they senselessly tried to pushes their version of WrestleMania every year, even though there was really no reason for it to be.
We got to see a member of the Four Horsemen, Steve Mongo McMichael.
Oh man, he wasn't looking good.
And we got to see that epic Sting versus Joe match where Joe ruined his career by destroying his knee.
Oh yeah, he jumped like three flights of bleachers and just landed on the concrete on his back.
Yeah.
Died.
Yeah.
And then Sting, you know, that up-and-comer Sting was finally crowned the world champion.
Yeah.
Capping off that Cinderella story. The Sears Center. There's some bad hoodoo in that arena.
No, they'll be good.
There's still a bunch of TNA stink in there, Young Bucks. I think maybe you wanted to go somewhere else.
Oh, I think there was also like a spot where like Abyss was supposed to get set on fire, but they couldn't set him on fire.
I remember
they did set him on fire.
Clusterfuck about Abyss and fire.
And couldn't get him out.
Did that guy ever wrestle a single match where he didn't get lit on fire or put in fucking thumbtacks? Yeah, Jesus Christ, man. He was like the biggest guy on the roster, too. He could have just been working like easy big man matches.
Nah.
Instead, he was a total dum-dum.
Working Mankind
shredded
matches.
His fucking body for nothing.
Look at him now.
Pull your head out of your ass, dude.
I got a number 4.
Okay, good.
We're running out of things to talk about.
Not really. I still keep going.
Okay. Well, my number 4, not the bunkhouse stampede, but what everyone was wearing to the bunkhouse stampede.
There you go.
Everybody's got some sweet, a lot of jeans and cowboy boots.
Skin tight jeans. Everybody's
jeans and cowboy boots.
Might have been. I think it was before they had those like yoga tights that looked like denim. Mm-hmm. So I don't think they were wearing those.
Nope.
But they might as well have been.
These are skin-tight Wranglers tucked into cowboy boots. A lot of people with bandanas tied somewhere on their body.
Tucked in button-ups.
What else we got?
Got to tuck those button-ups into your jeans.
Yep. We got a lot of tank tops.
That's how you look like a tough cowboy.
A lot of tank tops. We got Warlord wearing one that just says, Lifeguard.
Is he?
Nope. I think he's quite the opposite.
That guy's pretty dense. I don't even know if he could float.
I saw him this weekend. He could barely walk. I don't think he could swim back in 88.
Oh, that's true.
What else did we have? Lex just looked great, but there was a lot of weightlifting belts. And I get like if one guy wears a weightlifting belt to the ring, cause you're going to work in a spot where somebody gets beat like they did. But, everybody
was wearing them. There was a good whipping that went on in there.
Everybody was wearing them. And then Arn Anderson came out and I was like, Arn Anderson, AA.
Weightlifting belts look cool. If this guy's looking cool with a weightlifting belt, like, I'm not going to go out without one. I want to look cool too.
You're wearing one too. But then he got closer to the camera, and I realized he just cut the midriff off of his t-shirt.
There you go. And that's his leathery belly I'm looking at.
Disgusting, gross, fat belly.
Just looking at his leathery belly. That's not a weight belt at all. Good for you, Arn Anderson. I was wondering why that weight belt looks so hairy.
So that's my number 4.
Okay. My number 4 is just picking on the booking of, not necessarily the booking, a little bit of that, like a... I started thinking about it during that second ref bump. You know, there was a ref bump in the Western States Heritage title, and then the next match, world title match, you get a ref bump again, and I'm like, oh, they're doing that thing where they do the same shit in, like, every fucking match. You know, you don't talk about what's on the card, and you just have the same finish over and over again. But, man, it got worse than that as it comes to formatting a show. They're setting up the cage for that bunkhouse stampede. Can you think of a fucking worse way in the world to kill time while they're setting up a cage? Then to just read out the show credits.
Yeah.
They literally just put the credit. Executive producer, camera operator.
Yeah, that was the stupidest shit.
While Bob Cottle just read the credits as they scrolled in front of you, the fucking event's not over.
No.
Cut a couple fucking promos in the back. Have these guys who were about to be in the bunkhouse, like, you know, get them on a mic and have them talk about it. You put the camera on your two dumb announcers and just have them read credits and try to vamp until this fucking steel cage is up?
Or here's a great idea.
Have you never put something on television before?
Here's a great idea. You got that stupid bench press competition coming up.
Oh, yeah.
How about you give that gimmick to somebody else not involved in the bunkhouse stampede and have that go on while you're setting up a cage for 15 minutes?
That could happen. There you go. And then, you know, you get Dusty's big win at the end, and the crowd's cheering. Dusty's got his cowboy boot up in the air, and then they pull the move they always fucking do. They don't end on the celebration, the end of... Then we're going to cut it back to our announcers for no fucking reason.
Hey, Jim Ross, it's me, Bob Cottle. What did you think about that match?
Ending on the hot moment, ending on the up note where everybody's like, oh, that was a great show. I just watched. You have the announcers talk about nothing for like another 5 minutes. Why did they used to always do that?
It was really good. I can't even begin to tell you how much scotch I drank during that entire pay-per-view.
You remember we had a Western States Heritage match? And we all just fucking watched it. Like, get your high note, get your fucking climax, your big moment, and then fucking roll credits. Leave them wanting more.
And it gets worse. The team working on the statue in Lafayette Square kind of over-smoothed it. They ground the head down to about the size of a softball. And that spells trouble.
All right, well, why don't we smooth the head down to nothing, stick a pumpkin under its arm, and change the nameplate to Ichabod Crane. All right!
That's it for me. Be good, everybody.
My number five.
Number
is
five.
Just the bunkhouse stampede.
Address the bunkhouse stampede.
Yeah, that's pretty much so, it. Just address it.
It's probably the dumbest idea for a match I've ever heard.
It happened.
Mm-hmm.
It existed.
First off, I hate cage matches that have escape rules.
Do you?
The whole point of a cage match is supposed to be, you know, you can't get out. Somebody's been running from somebody, mm-hmm. and now they're trapped in there. They're going to have to fight. Or somebody's been having their friends interfere, and now they're trapped in you with the cage, and, you know, one-on-one, you're going to grind their face into the cage. It's going to be brutal. If you add this escape element, it's just, you're creating some sort of, like, American Gladiators type, just fun event where you got to climb stuff. Yeah. To make a battle royal situation where the entire point of it is everybody's got to escape out of the cage.
Is that like a rumble royal?
Does this not just completely kill the idea of the cage being like, oh, now they're trapped in the cage with me. There's no way in or out. Like, whoo, that whole notion, the entire notion of what makes a cage match cool and like why it can blow off a feud, just throw it in the toilet and piss and poop all over it.
At least this match, it was somebody had to throw you out of the cage as opposed to just like,
I have to try to get out myself.
Yeah.
Which essentially I win if I'm the most cowardly.
Yeah. And like, there's so many points in matches like that where you got to be like, why aren't you just leaving right now?
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't you just leaving? Or like when they do the stupid, like, oh, the door's open now for no reason.
I got to tell you. Anyways, you want to talk about senseless things happening in matches.
Yeah.
In a match, or one of the ways to lose is to be thrown over the top of the steel cage.
People constantly.
Why would you ever climb to the top of the steel cage?
I don't know, but Tully kept doing it.
I'm going to climb up here so I'm easy to throw over the top.
Tully just kept doing it.
You'd be sticking to the ground.
Time and time again.
Hanging onto the ropes. You'd go nowhere near the top of the cage.
Yeah, my battle.
There's no sense in logic to this dumb concept of a match whatsoever.
My battle plan would probably be go to the turnpost kitty corner to the door.
Mm, yeah.
And then just wrap myself up in that bottom rope.
Sure. Just make myself a nice little human egg.
Just wrap around like the turnpost, the little connector to the rope, all that.
Everybody else climb to the top of the cage and play chicken like a couple of dummies. I'm just going to, because it's so hard to just like, half these guys are too big for anybody to throw them over the top. You can only throw one guy out of the fucking door at a time.
Yeah.
So like there's only one person that can be working an elimination spot at a time, and that's why they had to get everybody out in these like stupid, ooh, we all fell out of the door at the same time spots. Like
just to clear people
just
out.
Just no way to work this match well, because it's such a stupid concept. It makes no sense. And then you can bring weapons in. So then you're going to have a spot at the end where a manager's like handing brass knuckles through
that's
the cage for
deal.
Somebody.
Yeah.
Who the fuck cares? Everybody already brought weapons in.
Yeah, you could have just had that cheat. You could have just had that in your pocket the entire time.
You can't work a cheating spot into a match where there's no rules and everyone already has weapons.
What was one of the other things?
Know, I got to imagine this is probably a Dusty Rhodes concept. It's got
it's
Dusty
be great
all over
Eddie.
Him. He came up with some winners, but man, he came up with some fucking stinkers.
Well, that's what makes the good great.
This shit makes no sense. It's so dumb.
Oh, the camera work. That's what I wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe we're spoiled this day and age. We've watched enough Royal Rumbles.
Boy, am I.
We watched enough Royal Rumbles where there's intensity going everywhere, and God bless the WWE. They do a good job cutting to what's important.
God bless America.
You know, where you're not missing the big spots, this and that. But like this match,
mm-hmm.
there is no discussion of like, this is where we're working a big spot. This is where we're working a big spot.
That was a
and
thing that just plagued all of WCW.
The camera was constantly
just missed shots.
Cutting every which way. And like, you know,
you
got to
wonder if they even like
elimination halfway
had
through.
Like a director looking at all the cameras angles backstage and like saying to cut from one to two, or if it just
and they,
like
they probably did, but like what were his credentials?
Yeah, and like what was the setup? Like, ugh, it had to have been some janky ass shit, because from the beginning of their inception as a company to the very end, one thing you can always count on is when something big was going down,
you weren't
gonna
see
the camera
it.
Would be pointed at something stupid. Something stupid that doesn't matter.
I know for a fact one of their cameramen is a third brother, Jack Crockett.
Oh, yeah, I saw that Crockett. Well, I know because Bob Caudle read all the credits for us before this match started.
Well, I skipped over that. But either way, like I've known that he was in the you know, one of the grunts.
Nepotism at its finest. Got the whole Crockett family.
You think about, like,
it's a family affair.
You think that Jack Crockett,
every half-bred hillbilly with the last name Crockett's getting a job on this crew.
You think he like had any work in television or something before he got this job as cameraman?
I wouldn't imagine.
No, he's like their fucking third brother that fucking made himself half handicapped sniffing glue in their parents' basement.
Wow.
You know,
I didn't,
and they're like, oh,
didn't hear that was going on.
We got to get old Jackie a job. What should we do? We can make a cameraman.
Yeah, we're not even going to let him be like the second banana on the TV. We've already got David doing that.
If this was 2018, fuck it.
Can you imagine like how fucking much of a dum-dum this guy has to be to like not be able to get David's spot away from him?
That's what I'm saying. Like if it was 2018...
David Crockett is just like a dumb, blank-faced man.
Whatever the fuck is wrong with Jack Crockett, in 2018, he would be collecting a disability check. He'd be getting Social Security, you know? But back in 88, they're like, you can be a cameraman. We got to get you out of mom and dad's basement.
It's really good. I had a job. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Jim.
He could have been one of those just like a real sad basement people. Like,
yeah.
These days, they've got, like, the internet to be on all day.
But Jack had
back
nothing.
Back in the day, all they had was, like, Dungeons and Dragons once a week or whatever. So, like, their parents were probably a lot more worried about him back then. Just like,
I'm telling you, like, you know, like, Jack, like I said, was sniffing too much glue at his parents' house. And by the time he was, like, 19, was burnt out. Or was, like,
making model airplanes and going getting high off the glue.
It's 88, so, like, late 70s, early 80s. He's going to, like, fucking Skinner and
my family was
trash
rich.
Shows.
I'd be dressed like Miami Vice. I'd just be, like, at, I don't know, Lake Havasu all the time on
That'd
a speedboat.
Cool. But you know this guy
I
did, like,
be
badass
camera operator on my dumb family member's TV show.
Or what probably happened was,
a trust fund.
Jack was like partying with his like rich buddies in the South, and like
that sounds so cool.
He was like wasted and like fell out of somebody's
convertible. Maybe the judge ordered that he had to get a job after an incident.
I'm thinking he like drunkenly fell out of somebody's convertible IROC.
Got a little road rash,
head injury,
falling out of that IROC Z.
And they're like, let's just let him be a camera guy.
He might have pulled a Hulk Hogan's son and like killed somebody in a car. So then the judge is like, you got to get a job or you're going to jail, man.
After old man Crockett said the N-word.
Make yourself a
the
citizen.
Prison.
Prove to us that you could be a productive member of society in a Billy Madison fashion. Probably could have been a pretty good Crockett family reality show back in the day if reality shows were a thing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Pay to watch that business.
So I guess our number five is more so Jack Crockett.
Yep.
Third Crockett.
Nice to see you're getting a paycheck.
Yeah.
That's the Bunkhouse Stampede.
Well.
1988. Might have been the last one they ever did. I don't know.
Should have been.
By the time, late in this year, Turner buys the company. I don't think they were doing Bunkhouse Stampedes anymore. They classed it up a bit. We're moving to Georgia. Get
Turner,
this Carolina shit out of here.
Turner was a hillbilly, but he didn't like all that hillbilly
no,
shit.
No, yeah, he was like an old money hillbilly probably, you know.
He was like that show, Dallas.
Get these coloreds off my property, that kind of hillbilly.
Well, I say now, please, I do not care to have these coloreds on my property.
Nobody does.
I don't think you can say that, friend.
That's,
That's
just a get a laugh.
Oh.
Let's take a break and think about what I just said.
I'd rather not.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Listen, friends, it's one thing to play a bigot on TV, and it's quite another thing to be a bigot in real life. You know, there are still people around who are willing to hurt other people by judging them primarily on their race or their religious beliefs. Now, bigotry has not helped Archie Bunker's life. You know that. It has spoiled it in many ways. Small and large.
Prejudice is something America can do without.
It's yours?
No, I...
Your mother said she found it in your closet.
I don't know, one of the guys must have...
Must have what?
Look, Dad, it's
Where
not...
Where did you get it?
Dad,
answer me! Who taught you how to do this stuff?
You, all right? I learned it by watching you.
Parents who use drugs have children who use drugs.
I made a three count today.
Oh, I wasn't ready for all this emotion.
Sat down and counted the ways.
Brother.
I just called to say I'm listening to Baby Oil and Blow.
That was appropriate to the whole Kid Rock conversation at the beginning. It was just beautiful vocals. It brought a tear to my eye. The lyrics are on point to just talk about what we're actually doing right now. I gotta say, 10 stars right there, brother.
Crushed it.
Like, just killed it right there. Yeah. That's a great way to come back from a commercial break if I've ever seen one.
Fuck you, wrestling dorks. I just 10 starred it.
So I think also we just kind of answered our own question from earlier, too, about who is likely to induct Kid Rock into the WWE Hall of Fame. If they don't get Sheryl Crow up there on stage to do it, they're really pulling a boner. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, man.
Just seeing those two together again is just going to make me start welling up.
Oh, just cutting the flare constantly?
You could just do a whole Macho and Liz like reunion type thing going on there.
Sheryl?
Just
Sheryl?
Kid Rock and Sheryl coming face to face again.
Me?
Then they just keep cutting back to... that kid's face in Macho Man's retirement match.
Yeah.
That goofy crying kid in the 90s hat.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That kid's probably still getting picked on wherever he is, that kid.
Let's find him.
What an infamous fucking image. Just Macho and Liz getting back together after the Warrior retires Macho. And Liz comes out to his aid. And then, we got to find somebody in the crowd who's like responding to this like we do. And then they just find, did you say? Was that like a 14-year-old boy, probably? Just like teenage boy?
Yeah, because
he's not supposed to care about anything at that age. Supposed to be too fucking cool for anything when you're a teenager.
He was like young, but not young enough.
No, just bawling his
nerdy
fucking eyes out.
Should have known better.
This wrestling romance story.
Then fall in
love. You couldn't get me to admit that I cared about fucking anything when I was 14 years old. I mean,
no heart.
Granted, this was 1995, so we were at the height of the slacker movement. This wasn't like early 90s or late 80s or whatever the fuck this shit happened, but still, man.
Back in 95?
95 was so cool. I was wearing flannels. I had a butt cut with some unkempt hairs. Just band t-shirt under that flannel. Just like whatever band I thought was cool week.
How many Crow shirts?
Just like 8 or 9 different The Crow shirts with Brandon Lee looking ominous on them.
You were like...
walking around scowling at everybody.
You were pretty much a Crown Point's Raven.
Nah, I'm still just like the Raven of my hometown.
Hey, Mom. Where's my high school yearbook?
It's out in the box in the garage. Mark Scotty's stuff. Put it out there. I told you.
Why is
you
it
that.
In the garage?
Because your grandmother moved in and I needed the room, Scotty. I told you that.
I know Grandma moved in, but why did you have to take my stuff down? She could have left my stuff on the walls.
The room.
Oh, I guess it was inappropriate for Grandma to have my stuff on the wall.
Yes.
The stuff was all tasteful, Mom. Oh.
Come on, Scotty, that's your mom, man. You don't need to disrespect her like that.
Shut up, Jim.
Oh,
hunkered down.
You haven't gotten nearly fat enough. You're in really good shape now.
Well, I'm kind of prime Raven. Now I'm...
Okay,
I'm
all right.
Good, 1997 Raven.
Cool, all
I
right.
I should start a flock.
I don't see why not.
Yeah.
What else are you doing with your life?
You got this house. You get the one
Oh, I'm sorry. You can't find people on
one
heroin to stay
here? Weird girl coming and going every once in a while. But other than her, there's plenty of room for just
People out.
Scratching behind their ears to be hunkered
sleeping
down.
Sleeping in a corner.
Various corners.
Yeah.
Be playing a lot of just 90s grunge music all the time. I got this record player right next to us right here. I don't think I got one fucking... vinyl piece of 90s grunge.
I was
gonna
say, can you get Alice in Chains Dirt on vinyl?
You gotta probably at least get Jar of Flies on vinyl. I bet that Temple of the Dog album is going for a pretty price out there on eBay. You can find that on vinyl. Probably dropping a cool $500 on that, I would imagine.
I'm going hungry.
talk about emotional songs, there's very few that have ever, I mean, other than Pearl Jam's Better Man, you're not going to find many many songs that are giving you more emotional.
Do not get me started on
fucking Hunger Strike.
Oh, Better Man.
That's maybe perfect. The pinnacle of the 90s right there. Like, yeah. And it's like known for just like withering sarcasm and slackers that decade.
Oh, here comes that cannonball guy. He's cool.
Are you being sarcastic, dude?
I don't even know anymore.
And yeah. Maybe a little bit of that's fair, but when you got a band like Pearl Jam putting out just like deep, emotional, earnest songs like Better Man, come on.
Oof.
Gen X is getting a bit of a bad rap.
Speaking of Raven matches,
mm-hmm.
He could very well end up on our three count.
Okay. Yeah, the Bunkhouse Stampede gave us a little inspiration.
It did.
It's such a terrible gimmick match. We're doing three bad gimmick match ideas. What are the gimmick matches that you don't like that never work out? Conceptually bad. I can't remember Raven ever being involved in something that wasn't any good.
Yeah, you're right. It was hard not to make all of my decision be TNA matches.
Okay, I made a rule where I'm just doing like standard gimmick matches that you'd see just like a lot. Like they do
more than once.
Yeah, I'm not falling down the well of like dumb ideas that Vince Russo came up with at some point.
No, I hear you. I hear you. Because I got a lot of different ways.
Yeah, because that's just endless.
I got about 20 matches.
That's just endless right there.
Yeah, you're looking for not just a match that showed up once, like a Clockwork Orange.
Oh,
whatever match.
Oh, wow, that's where you're going. You're going to talk shit about Raven's Clockwork Orange House of Fun?
Yeah, I'm saying...
This is one of the best gimmick matches of all time.
I'm not saying I put it on there, but I'm saying somebody could put that on there.
Okay, do you remember the specifics of the Raven's Clockwork Orange House of Fun match?
Okay, all right. There was like poles.
There was poles.
There were chains.
Of course there was.
There were chains going various directions.
Oh, man.
With weapons hanging from the chains.
And did they set up a bar in the ring at any point in a popcorn maker?
No, but there was Raven's perch.
Oh, no. You're remembering a lot of details
you
here.
You had to get...
I kind of thought it was just the dumb thing he was calling a hardcore match at that point of his career.
Oh, I thought you were like testing me.
No.
Oh, well, I'm just going to educate you then.
Okay, yeah.
So there's chains going various directions with weapons attached to them, okay?
Uh-huh.
Now, in one of the corners, there's a perch above the top turnbuckle.
That's clever.
That you have to get onto, and that's Raven's perch.
Sure.
And the way the match
Why do you want to get up there?
Well, that's the way the match ends. You go.
It just ends with you crouched up above the ring?
No, you go up on a Raven's perch, and you got to push your opponent through two tables that are outside.
So you both got to get up on the perch.
I think.
Theoretically, the match could never end if neither of you decide to climb up on top of this.
Correct.
It's called a Raven's Clockwork Orange House of Fun match. I have a destiny. I have a destiny to be NWA World Heavyweight Champion. I came here with one goal, one purpose. But then I was sidetracked by a madman with a hard-on for my crucifixion. So Sandman, I'm going to put Jeff Jarrett on the back burner. And next week, I'm going to take you in a Raven's Clockwork Orange House of Fun match. Originally, this only existed in my head. But now, next week, I will bring that creation to life. Sandman, I am the way to the city of woe. I am the way to the forsaken people. I am the way to eternal sorrow. Walk with me, Sandman, for I am Raven. Walk with me, Sandman, through the Clockwork Orange House of Fun match. On the top it will say, abandon hope, all ye who enter here. The loser will be dumped unceremoniously from my perch through a pair of tables here. The rest of the creation, you'll have to wait for next week to see, because if I were to speak about it, it would not do it justice. So Sandman, welcome to Raven's Clockwork Orange, House of Fun.
Quote the raven, nevermore.
Okay, what's your real number three? Let's get into this.
Okay.
Let's get into this list right here.
Let's see.
Do some
here.
Bitching about gimmick matches that don't make any sense.
We've talked TNA the whole time. Matches. So I got to put at least one TNA match that's happened multiple times.
There we go.
And that is a King of the Mountain match.
There you go. I don't know that I've ever actually seen one, but I do remember the specifics of this one.
All right. Let's see what you got.
So I know that there's a penalty box.
Right. Now, that's one of my biggest points to this.
Uh-huh.
What is wrestling?
It's a combat sport.
It's, yeah, you
usually
know,
usually between two individuals.
Just beating each
Sometimes
other up.
Sometimes there's tag teams, though.
But you beat each other up. May the best man win.
Right.
They have a penalty box.
Well, yeah.
How are there penalties in wrestling?
Okay, see. This is the thing. It's not just like you do something wrong, you get thrown in the penalty box. It's a deal where if you get pinned or you submit, you have to spend time in the penalty box. So, like, that's just you
so
being a failure.
So how about you just lose?
Okay, see, but no, no, no. The match isn't over when somebody's pinned or submitted.
Oh, I see. Keep going.
It's a ladder match, essentially.
Oh, where you go get a title from something that it's hanging. The title's hanging, right?
But in order to be eligible to get the thing that's hanging, you have to make somebody pin or submit. And then you are eligible to try to climb to the top of the thing and get the... which, I think, King of the Mountain match, it was...
You're not getting something.
It was never a crown they were trying to get, even though this was called the King of the Mountain match.
Hold on.
Which is one complaint I have.
You're not trying to retrieve anything.
Oh, that's
you're
right.
You're trying to get a
you're
pinfall...
You're trying to hang something.
So that you can hang the belt to become the champion.
So then when you win the match, you get that big, triumphant moment of having to climb back up and then go get your belt again so you could celebrate it.
Correct.
Because you've hung it up where you can't reach it.
That's how you win that match.
That's stupid.
Tonight here on Impact, who will be the next athlete to go on to the King of the Mountain match? June 18th at Slammiversary, Jeff Jarrett. Could it be you tonight? We will find out later on. Could you go on to the King of the Mountain match or will you go home?
Borash, going home is not an option because Sunday, June 18th at Slammiversary, that's the night that I regain my title.
Shut up, Jeff! See, I came here for two reasons. That's to watch your back and to beat up Sting. See, I beat up Sting. I beat him down. And the only reason he's still walking because he has that redneck luck, like a pig in slop, slipping and sliding from week to week. Well, Zbyszko, look at me right now. I don't have a problem with beating you up. So you pull my name out of the hat, you pull Sting's name out of the hat because I want him tonight. And now that I'm so pissed off, Small Joe, I proved to you that you were not man enough to be in the same ring with me. Another thing you don't do is you don't eyeball me, boy. Next time you look at me face to face, I'm gonna slap the taste right out of your mouth. Nobody eyeballs Big Bad Booty Daddy. Nobody, because it makes me want to snap!
My number three is a match that's been around for a lot of decades. It's a match they just keep trying to do over and over and over again, even though just they never work out, and there's a million other things you could do that are better. This is the Iron Man match.
Oh.
60 minutes. Whoever gets the most pinfalls or submission in a 60-minute period is the winner. Lately, it seems like all the ones I've been seeing have been 30-minute Iron Man matches, which I have even more of a problem with. It seems like they've figured out how boring Iron Man matches are, so they're like, oh, let's get this thing over with. Now we're only going to do 30.
Half hour.
Which takes the whole Iron Man element out of it, because, most main events go about 20 minutes, so you're not really a fucking Iron Man if you're lasting 30.
Except for the World Television title match that we discussed earlier tonight.
Mm-hmm.
The other two matches were both like 30-minute matches.
There you go. Standard title match. But the Iron Man match, there's just not enough different ways to book these things to make it interesting, to do it more than like once or twice. What's the only way it can end? It can end, you're coming down to that 60 minutes and it's tied and who's going to get the thing? Or maybe you're coming down to it and the good guy's down by one. So he has to hurry up and try to get two big pins at the end. But then you still know he's going to get that one pin. And then, yeah, you're left once again. Yeah. Like I said, the first thing, the only way it could come down, you're getting down to the 60 minutes and it's tied. That's the only way this could go.
You're just waiting for a final pinfall.
So essentially, the entire hour up before this is meaningless. The only reason to watch, or the only thing you need to watch, is the last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's a big time filler.
Yeah.
The Iron Man match is essentially the NBA game of the wrestling world.
I was going to equivalate that because a lot of people are like, you don't have to watch NBA basketball,
which
I disagree with.
NBA is stupid and
boring. You just
got to
watch the last 2 minutes.
Yep, and then they just call timeouts and draw that out for like a good 40 fucking minutes. Thank God there's no timeouts in Iron Man matches, or
there's more.
They could
it
be
than
even
that.
Fucking worse. There's not more to it than
there's
that.
More to
basketball
it than
is
that.
A stupid sport.
No, college basketball is a stupid sport.
It absolutely is. There's no disagreement there.
But you're saying instead of a 60-minute Iron Man match, just book a regular match.
Yeah.
And then have it go
have
60 minutes.
Have it go
minutes.
60 minutes. That's a great
and
way to
kids
do it.
Don't even realize.
That's an awesome way to do
Remember
it.
Remember when everybody jizzed their pants because of the Rainmaker and Kenny Omega?
Oh, yeah.
Going
they went
60
really
minutes?
Long. That whole Bryan Danielson Ring of Honor title run, he was doing 60-minute matches right and left, and people kept talking about how it was the greatest title run anybody had seen in decades. Ric Flair, back in the day, the 60-minute man, he'd be having all these long matches every night. It wasn't because he was booked in an Iron Man match. It was just because he was proving that he was an Iron Man by wrestling for long. And then you're having a normal match where there's a million different ways it could end. You're not locked into this one fucking ending that has
it's
to happen
stupid.
Over and over and over again.
And plus, it's so fucking choreographed. You gotta have it done down to the last fucking second.
They're always just like, the end is never fluid because it's always like the 10, 9, 8. They're like, oh, when do I hit this move? I got to try to hit it at 6. I got to make sure I'm pinning him right at 2. I can't pin him at 4 because then I'm going to win. And they look like dum-dums. It's never organic. I want them to have one more Iron Man match in wrestling and just have it end like 5-0. Just have like one guy get destroyed over and over again.
I was going
to
say,
and then never do another one again.
Oh, the time limit's up on this Iron Man match, and you lost 7-1.
You really got beat up. After, like, the fourth one where you couldn't defend yourself anymore, we should have just we should have ended it. I'm sorry.
He let you get that one after his third.
There was still,
just
like,
so he could
19
take a breather
minutes
for
left
3
in the
seconds.
Match, so we couldn't end it. So now you have serious brain damage.
You won that one because he was so tired from beating you up, he sat outside the ring for 20 seconds and got counted out.
That's my number three.
That's fair.
What's your number two?
We have one of the greatest gimmick matches. Well, it just passed. Just passed.
Oh, it died?
Well, I'm sorry. I got excited about it's coming up.
Rest in peace.
We're about to review it ourselves.
The Royal Rumble.
The Rumble
Royal.
Royal.
1988.
You'd agree.
20 or 30 men. Not sure.
Yeah.
It's either the Royal Rumble or the Rumble Royal. Either way, next week we're talking about it.
Battle Royal is a great concept. And then the WWF went a step further.
Good way to get a big man over as just a monster. Have him throw like 20 people out of the ring.
He doesn't even have to fucking win. You just have him eliminate a lot of people. And then you talk about it for months. Either way, the Battle Royal is a great way to get people over than the WWF.
Royal Rumble takes it to another notch because you're bringing people in one at a time. So you don't have the problem of like, oh, there's too many people in the ring. Like nobody can really move or do anything. I can't really tell what's happening.
Okay. All right. I hear what you're saying. Yeah. So too many people in the ring.
So it makes a Battle Royal even better. But I love the Royal Rumble.
Okay. So maybe if you don't want too many people in the ring at once, what if you had a lot of people, but you spread it out to 3 separate rings?
That you wouldn't even be able to sell enough seats in the arena to make a profit, probably, if you're setting up 3 rings right next to each other.
Yeah, no, you
can.
Seems
like a dumb idea
and
to
you
me.
Call it World War III.
World War III is also my number two.
Whoa, here we go.
What a dumb, dumb match.
3 rings.
60 men, 20 in each ring.
All at once.
Yeah, it's not just like one battle royal starts and then the next battle. No. All
at
once.
It's everybody's in there. And, gee, Nate, what was that thing we talked about earlier with the bunkhouse stampede?
Camera
and
work. When all this stuff's happening in different places, how do you get it all on camera? How do you have anyone be able to follow what's happening? Whoever came up with the idea for World War III had clearly never shot anything for television at all. Yeah. You got three split screens on three different rings.
Yep.
At the same time.
Yeah.
In like 1980s, 1990s, just like 30-inch square low definition televisions.
Correct. Before a high def. It went,
how is anybody supposed to see anything?
95 to 98?
In this just,
I want to say,
mishmash of just things, well, not even things happening. It's people walking around, finding somebody, trading a forearm with them,
punch,
then
punch,
walking
forearm,
around in another circle, finding another guy, trading a forearm with him. And
punch, kick, kick.
Just 30 minutes of boring, just motionless, contained chaos, because nobody can really move around, but they're still not doing anything, and just there's no sense to anything. There's no way you could set up like big spots, storylines, nothing.
I'm going to be honest. I can't even remember, like, does it finally condense to one ring?
After there's like a winner of each ring, and then you all get in the same ring, I think.
Yeah.
And then like then it goes until there's a winner there. And then that person has won all of the battle royals and is the winner of World War III. World War III, worst idea ever.
Yeah.
WCW. You had a lot of bad ones.
Maybe we should have made that number one.
Yeah.
I have a number one.
Yeah, let's get to it.
Let's see if it's the same.
Could be.
Anything on a pole match?
Ooh, I'm going a different route.
Oh,
okay. So, yeah.
We got something to talk about.
This is back to what I was talking about, that era of Vince Russo.
Anything.
That man loved to book pole matches.
A pole match. And they existed before Russo.
Sure, sure.
But
he really started
Loved in them. At WCW, I'm going to run down a couple of them just off the top of my head here. We had the... well, there's the famous San Francisco 49ers gold match.
Oh,
where it was.
Don't remember that at all.
It's not just the two different poles or one pole. You got four poles.
Yeah.
Four boxes.
This is the prelude to the TNA Feast or Fired match.
Essentially.
Sounds like.
This is like 2000 or 2001.
Yeah, this is Vince Russo working out his idea for the Feast or Fired, probably.
This is Jarrett and Booker T.
Oh, so this is when Booker T opened up the briefcase and there was a picture of Scott Hall in it, and that's how
Correct.
The match ended?
Correct. So
what the fuck was that?
There's the four
What's
of them.
What does that have to do with San Francisco gold?
There's the two of them. Well, there's four boxes.
Mm-hmm.
One of them has the championship strap in it.
Well, I hope I get that one.
The other one has a blow-up doll. One of them has I forget what, and then the other one had a framed picture of Scott Hall.
This is some weird stuff to put in there.
Yeah.
I'll guess I'll give TNA some credit. They made the idea much better once it became Feast or Fired.
Yeah.
That's way better than
absolutely.
Just the title or random bullshit that has no consequence.
But anything on a pole, really. Vince Russo also had Viagra on a pole.
There was definitely a Viagra on a pole match.
Billy Kidman and I forget who.
Maybe Shane Douglas. Was that the point where they were feuding over Torrey Wilson?
Shane Douglas.
It
was Shane Douglas.
As a valet.
Torrey Wilson, or Shane Douglas and Kidman for the Viagra on a pole match. The fourth container in the San Francisco 49ers match just came back to me. It was the championship, the championship title, the Scott Hall picture, a blow-up doll.
Or,
and then that fourth box.
This is exciting.
One of the most famous items of all.
Oh, wow. More famous than the Scott Hall picture.
A coal miner's glove.
There you go. You want to talk about shitty gimmick matches? You can talk about the major disappointment that was Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal at Halloween Havoc.
Pal.
Just your little mind flush with all the matches that wheel could land on. What are they going to do?
What's it going to be? Coal miner's glove match.
Did the match keep going till somebody got the title?
Yeah.
Basically, it was just like, womp womp, you got the dud prize.
Wrong box.
Yeah, that's stupid. That's so stupid.
And surprisingly, they picked the title fourth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. Only one way that kind of match could hash itself out.
How about it? So yeah, anything on a pole, you suck.
Judy Bagwell on a forklift, though, legendary.
Oh hell yeah!
You put something on a forklift. Yeah. That's not the same thing. That's different.
I'm sorry.
Great match.
Who else's mom called Jim Ross and said their son couldn't make it to an event that weekend?
I gotta imagine no one else's mom. My number one, not putting things up on a pole. It's putting wrestlers up on a scaffold. Don't do it ever.
Oh.
The scaffold match. Just basically a scaffold match is a bunch of guys clinging to a rail, looking scared and tentative, and not really doing anything, the wrestling match.
But the chemistry's there,
wobbly right? Kneed, not able to do nothing. Maybe you trade slaps for a little bit while you both have a death grip on a pole, just a railing up somewhere. The match. But it doesn't work.
The chemistry's there, right?
No, there's no way to even work a match whatsoever. You're just really? On a tiny little platform. Huh. You can't really move. You can't do anything.
So you spend the entire match on a Raven's
perch? Trying not to fall down. Perch? Yeah, it's essentially, they took Raven's perch and just made an entire match.
Oh, wow.
The only way you could make this match good is literally if it was just two guys who were going to kill themselves in the match. Because you see this, you think of these huge spectacular images of like Mick Foley getting thrown off the Hell in the Cell, like, okay, oh, it's going to be some good thing. But no, you can't do that because that's impossible. People would die. Yeah. So it's always just ends with a guy hanging on to the end of the scaffolding by his fingers for a long time, and the other guy just stomps his fingers until like he finally lets go, and then the guy very just gingerly lets go and falls the smallest amount possible. As possible, yeah. And then it looks really bad and isn't thrilling, but the guy still probably blows out his knees.
I was going to say, tell that to Jim Cornette, yeah. Sir.
The guy still probably fucking blows out his knees at the end of this. Just, I mean, ECW sort of figured it out a little bit once they realized...
put a bunch of tables
underneath.
You can
stack
underneath.
A bunch of tables, but like, even that's just trite and all, just building up to one big inevitable spot. But the decades before that, and they were doing it before they knew to stack up tables, I don't even know what they wanted those matches to be. What was even the plan? What was the idea? And they did it in like several Starcades, even biggest show of the year.
How do you
pull out that scaffold?
How do you have that match go more than 5 minutes?
Oh, yeah, just multiple guys involved usually, too. And just like, these two guys are
always like
hanging on for dear life over on this end of the scaffold.
Or whatever.
These two guys are hanging on for dear life over on this end, and it's just...
And all you're doing is making
the 10 minutes of boredom.
Scaffold wobble by doing that.
Man, who the fuck is building these scaffolds, especially in the WCW company? You know, there's... Not anybody reputable.
It's probably Jack Crockett.
It could, yeah, they got Jack Crockett out there with just his hard hat and his, you know.
I got that soccer rice mom and dad gave me for
Fisher
Christmas.
Fisher Price tool set that he was given. Oh, Lord. God bless anybody who was brave enough to get on one of these fucking scaffolds and work one of these stupid scaffold matches. Dumb idea.
Man.
That's my number one bad idea for a wrestling match. Next week, Royal Rumble, the first one ever.
Rumble Royal?
That's a good gimmick match right there. We'll see how well they had the first one figured out. I probably haven't seen this one since 1988.
I wonder who wins it.
I remember who won it, but no spoilers.
Oh, we'll you're get into a good
that
man.
Next week.
Yeah, you want to find out who, you better tune in to Baby Oil and Blow.